Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke. This is the August 19th, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Well, thanks for tuning in on this Sunday afternoon to listen to another hour of Shop Talk about the space program. And I think you're really going to enjoy spending some time with us today as we focus on inspiring kids of truly all ages to get excited about our space program through the hobby of model rocketry. We'll do that with the help of two of my college buddies from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. Both are nationally known for their work with model rockets, Wes Olszewski and Patrick McCarthy. And then later in the program, if he remembers to call in, we'll hear from Lockheed Martin's Adrian Lafitte about a milestone in the history of the Atlas rocket that's about to take place. Plus, I'd be more than happy and grateful to have you listeners join us in the conversation today about the space program. Give us a call, 768-1240. The area code is 321 if you need it. Or if you prefer, you can send us an email to spacetalking@AOL.com. We'll see it on the computer right here in the studio and get to your questions and comments. Before we continue with this week's orbital inclinations, I do have some news about Space Talk and its home here on WMMB to share with everyone. Beginning on Labor Day weekend, this weekly Space Talk program will move to Saturdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time following the Kim Komando show. Now, we're making the move because of the beginning of the NFL regular season, and while in my mind WMMB is moving the show to Saturday so that I don't have to worry about missing any Minnesota Vikings games, the truth is it's because this station will be your home to live coverage of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So now it just happens to be a remarkable coincidence that for that first game of the season on September 9th does feature the Jaguars playing the Vikings at the Mall of America Field in Minneapolis. So I guess we'll all be tuned into that particular game together. In any case, I do want to say it would have been very easy for Bill Milk and the folks here at WMMB to just sort of scrub Space Talk for the entire football season, put the program on hiatus. I can tell you that everyone here at the station remains committed to our space program and recognizes its importance to the community, so I certainly thank them very much for their support. So once again, we'll have one more Space Talk program next Saturday, next Sunday, there you go, August 26th at 3 p.m., and then beginning on September 1st during the Labor Day weekend, we'll move to Saturday at 2 p.m. If you're all confused by the timing of this move, as you can tell I was as well, jump online, visit WMMBAM.com, keywords Space Talk for everything you do need to know about the program. All right, with that business out of the way, let's move on to this week's edition of my weekly broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. Well, the reasons that inspire people to dedicate their lives to the use and exploration of space are as many and varied as there are stars and galaxies in the universe. It might be an insatiable curiosity to see what's out there. It might be in the unique challenges that spaceflight presents to a scientist or engineer. Or perhaps it was some significant historical space-related event, such as Apollo 11 or even the Challenger disaster, that ignited an interest to become part of, well, what I believe is humanity's greatest endeavor. Now, for me, as a little boy growing up in Minnesota, my passion for all things space stems from a congruence of events and influences that include watching moonwalks on one TV channel and Star Trek reruns on another. The fact that the captain of the original Starship Enterprise and I shared the same first name, the fact that the president who first set our nation on a course to the moon was assassinated on my birthday, the fact that my grandma Banky kept a stack of Life magazines with stories about the original seven Mercury astronauts in the upstairs bedroom where I slept when I visited, and the fact that rockets launched from a tropical paradise so different from the cold winter wasteland where I grew up, well, all of that helped point me in the direction of becoming part of the space community here at the Kennedy Space Center and Cape Canaveral. Well, all of those things and more certainly sparked my interest in spaceflight. The thing that most fueled the flames of my desire were the hours I spent in my basement workshop putting together plastic models of airplanes and spaceships, and the time I spent building and flying model rockets. Assembling model rockets allowed me to set up and display my own rocket garden, just like at KSC, and gave me the opportunity to recreate the excitement of the countdown and the thrill of the sights and sounds of a real rocket launch, with my own scaled-down version of putting fire in the flame trench and hearing the roar of a booster blasting off. I had so much fun building, collecting, and flying these paper and balsa launch vehicles that I didn't even realize I was learning so much science along the way. Newton's laws of motion, aerodynamics, the difference between and importance of center of gravity and center of pressure, specific impulse of a solid rocket motor, and the tricks of properly packing a parachute. Well, like your first love, you never forget your first model rocket launch, and therein hangs a tale, which among my friends and family is known as the Honest John story. I was about 11 or 12 years old. My neighbor friends had started flying model rockets, and since I already was a true steely-eyed missile man wannabe, I thought that looked like fun. By that time, during the late 1960s, early 1970s, Estes was already the king of model rockets, and there also was Centurion model rockets, a few others. But for my first rocket, since I also needed a launch pad, my heart was set on the Cox model rocket brand. Now, Cox was already famous for their motorized airplanes, and thanks to the Apollo program, they put out a small group of plastic model rockets that came fully assembled and ready to fly. Now, I was sold on the Cox brand because their bright yellow launch pad was square, sat on four legs, and reminded me of an Apollo mobile launch platform sitting atop pad 39A. Their Saturn V was a little bit too big for me to handle for my first rocket, but their smaller Honest John rocket was a perfect starter. Even better, the Honest John, which, by the way, was an Army surface-to-surface missile, could be purchased in a starter kit complete with a launch pad and a box of engines and igniters. Now, I don't remember exactly under what circumstances my parents gave me that starter kit. It might have been for Christmas, or it might have just been one of those surprises that my dad occasionally brought home from work every once in a while. In any case, and I can assure you, it was not during the time of year in Minnesota when you could go outside and launch model rockets. So, when I got it, I assembled the launch pad, put stickers and decals on the rocket, loaded it with its solid propellant engine and igniter, and put it on display on the desk in my bedroom, waiting for that first day when the weather would be good enough to send that Honest John on a suborbital arc through space, or at least maybe a few hundred feet high. Soon it was springtime, and after staring at that rocket in my bedroom for hours on end, I was impatient to get that Honest John into the air. Very impatient. Schedule pressure instead of safety impatient. Where was legendary shuttle launch director Bob Seek to straighten me out when I needed him? Well, the day soon came when the snow had melted. It was reasonably warm enough and the skies were mostly clear. It was a little windy, but I could compensate for the wind by tilting the pad a bit so the rocket would fly into the wind and then drift back by parachute to land nearby. My dad thought it was too windy and said we should wait. My friends who had flown rockets said it was too windy and we should wait. My other friends who had gathered at the baseball field of Ron Elementary School to watch just wanted to see my rocket fly. And so did I. And so I declared that I was go for launch. What happened next? Well, I'll tell you right after we take our first break. When we return, we will finish the story about the Honest John. And we'll also be joined by my good friends Patrick McCarthy and Wes Olszewski as we continue to talk about model rockets, plus Adrian Lafitte a little bit later from Lockheed Martin in the program. For now, please do stay tuned. I'm Jim Behnke, and you are listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Well, welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240 is our phone number, and spacetalking@AOL.com is the email address to join us on the program today. Well, as part of this week's Orbital Inclinations, I was telling you the tale of my first model rocket launch, the infamous Honest John story. Well, picking up where we left off, the rocket was ready to fly on the launch pad. It was windy. I was impatient to fly, having stared at that rocket in my bedroom for several months while waiting for the Minnesota winter to give way to spring. So we were all gathered. The Honest John was poised to make history, and I declared that I was go for launch. Of course, that was my first mistake. My second mistake was that I had loaded the Honest John with a C-63 engine. But without taking time to explain the numbering system in too much detail, let me just tell you that a C engine is twice as powerful as a B engine, which is twice as powerful as an A engine. Now, generally speaking, for safety reasons, you're supposed to use an A engine for your first flight of a new rocket. But I wanted to see this thing really fly. So without consulting anyone or really informing anyone, I had loaded the rocket with the C engine. Now, ignorant of the potential consequences of my actions, I hooked up the igniter, inserted my launch key into the controller, confirmed I had good power going to the rocket, and started my countdown as the blustery wind of a Minnesota spring day swirled about. 3, 2, 1, and blast off. Well, the red and white Honest John streaked away from the pad and shot straight up, flying fast and true and trailing the telltale smoke of a solid-fueled rocket motor. Did I mention that I forgot to tilt the pad into the wind? Yeah, it flew straight up. As planned, nearly out of sight because of the C engine, the engine ejection charge fired, the rocket split in two as it's designed to do, and out came the parachute. The Honest John was a beautiful sight as it slowly drifted toward the ground, and thanks to the high wind, toward the dense woods beyond what was now apparently a way too small athletic field surrounding my school. Friends started running toward the woods even as the rocket disappeared into the trees. I remember my dad making a valiant effort to find it, even as I just stood there by my launch pad, shocked and dumbfounded. The notion that I might not ever see my rocket again began to dawn on me, and though I wanted to cry, I didn't. And no, we never did find it. The woods my rocket disappeared into years later were cleared, and now a shopping center with a Target is there now. I'd like to believe that some bulldozer driver found it, and my Honest John wound up with another little boy who could cherish it as his first rocket like I did. As I look back at it, I realize now that I had learned the important lesson that when it comes to launching rockets, you always have to put safety over schedule. And so now, as a grown adult, I'm ready to try it again. I purchased a Cox Honest John on eBay, and it's sitting on my desk right now, ready to fly. The launch could take place as early as this next Saturday. I can assure you I will not be flying it with a C engine, and I will not push the launch button if there is even a hint of a strong breeze. So the Honest John story may soon have a sequel. I'll let you know. And that's this week's Orbital Inclinations. Well, as we do continue our conversation today about model rocketry, I'm joined by two of my best friends and fellow classmates, graduates of Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach. With me in the studio today is Patrick McCarthy, who by day is Director of Spaceport Operations with Space Florida, and in much of his spare time is a nationally renowned and award-winning model rocketeer. Welcome back to the studio, Pat.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here as well. And on the phone with me from our nation's capital is also a well-known model rocketeer and the owner of Dr. Zuch Model Rockets, which we will have him tell us about shortly, my good friend and fellow space cadet, Wes Olszewski. Wes, good to have you back on Space Talk. How are you doing up there?
Hey, Jim, but I think you're actually not telling the truth to your listeners. I'm actually contained in a small white orb on your desk, and what they're hearing right now is the amazing power of my mind.
Is that what it is? Amazing power indeed. Well, guys, we want to talk about model rocketry today because it's such an important hobby as part of our space program and so much a history of a thing that inspired people to be a part of our space program. But let's go back to the basics and let's start. First of all, I'd like to hear what each of your Honest John stories are, if you've heard them. Wes, what was your first launch or your earliest model rocket experience that you can remember?
Well, the earliest one is the most infamous one. My dad had brought a model rocket home, and a friend of mine in the neighborhood had given me a half-built one to finish, and I took the half-finished one and completed it. Dad was told by the guy at the hobby store you had to have some kind of a metal rod that you put into the ground. And so he took a coat hanger and cut just the straight part out of it and stuck it in the ground, which is, of course, way too short to be a launch rod. But we didn't know. We stuck a little fuse in the end of the engine, and I lit the fuse, and it took off. It just cleared our garage and went horizontal down the street in front of our house. And so we all ran out of the backyard, a whole bunch of kids trailing down there, and there was a gentleman mowing the lawn in his wife beater sweat or T-shirt, and the rocket had embedded right in front of his lawnmower.
Oh, no.
And it was laying there smoldering. So, and that was the first of many odd things to fly out of our backyard.
And that's what you get for not following the proper safety code and using a fuse, right?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, really. Pat, what's your first and earliest story that you remember?
Well, unlike you guys, there was no schedule pressure. You know?
Oh, really?
Besides, I had to, you know, my brother and I picked it up about the same time. Our dad had brought home some rockets for us because he knew we were interested. And, you know, I didn't want to be embarrassed. You know, I figured my older brother's rocket would work, so mine had to work, too, because I didn't want him to pick on me for the remainder of the summer.
Yeah.
But we flew a Estes Alpha from Longstreet Elementary in South Daytona.
And, classic.
And luckily, the wind was blowing along the long dimension of the field, and we got it back after that first flight, which we did use an A engine for the
an
first
A engine,
flight.
And I'm sure you reused this rocket. These are all reusable rockets.
It lasted me for, probably three or four launches.
Alpha Rocket is the classic simple model rocket that I think every school kid starts with or should start with. Wes, I was curious, you know, I know because I know you, of course, you and I shared the history of being space cadets probably as early as we can have any memories. Did the space interest precede the model rocket flying, or did the model rocket flying get you into space?
Actually, I was already pretty much into space. It was something that I had taken up around Apollo 7, and then really started to gain interest during the Apollo 11 era in 1969. And as rocketry and space fever spread through the neighborhood, one of the kids down the block got a model rocket and launched it out of his side yard, and it went into a cornfield behind our houses. Everybody went out and looked for it. Nobody could find it. And I went out after everybody had gone out, walked right to it. And so I thought, I could keep this. And I ran home and I asked my dad, I said, you know, if I could find that rocket, could I keep it? And Dad said, no, you got to give it back to the owner. So I trudged back out there, got the rocket, gave it back to the kid, and he looked at it and went, oh, gee, thanks. And that was it.
And that was it.
Yeah, but my dad discovered I had the interest, so he brought home an MPC Flare Patriot.
Okay.
And that was my first kit, along with the half-built one that the neighbor gave me.
Wow, that's great. Pat, what about you? Your interest in space goes way back, too.
I think it was pretty much developed about the same time. You know, I was we were growing up in Daytona, and I was watching rockets take off from our front porch, you know, or down on the beach every time one launched from the Cape. My dad would either wake us up early or make sure we knew about it. We'd go out and watch. And then, you know, he was selling them in the store he worked at. So it's like, hey, here's an interesting thing that ties the two together. So I think they developed about the same time.
You know, all three of us have similar stories, and except for Wes lighting his fuse on his first rocket, which, you know, again, we just kind of put our hold up our nose to him when we talk about that. But, you know, we all basically used model rockets with real live model rocket engines. And I think a lot of people out there have read October Sky and seen, you know, Rocket Boys, or is it the other way around? But see, Homer Hickman's book and movie, I was, you know, so
right. October Sky was the movie.
Well, yeah, October Sky and Rocket Boys was the book. And I just had Homer on a few weeks ago. But in any case, very famous for putting his own propellant together, building these things from scratch, very heavy duty metal, high power and all that kind of thing. Wes, I was curious, you know, do you remember your first experience reading his book or dealing with it? And, you know, any comments about that way of doing model rockets as opposed to more of the straight hobby kit way of doing things?
Well, it's, I never built one according to the instructions. I always cobbled something new together from the parts that were in the kit.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I did not read Homer's book, and I didn't even see the movie until after my mom saw it.
Yeah.
And she said, that's your story. And I watched the movie, and I said, no, it's not my
not
story.
Not quite the story.
I'm not that good at math, and my dad supported me 100% of the way. So, you know, he was behind me on every launch.
You know, I had the same exact feeling. You know, I mean, I've read parts of the book, and I've seen the movie, and it wasn't my experience. It was very different. And there may be a uniqueness to his story that made it so popular. Maybe we're just three boring old guys. But, Pat, you know, you with your alpha, you couldn't have started the more perfect way, and you followed that through kind of your whole rocket career.
I did. I mean, sure, I'm a conservative type that tends to follow the rules, and I do have some measure of originality, but it doesn't always show itself in model rockets.
Well, Pat, I was going to say tell us about rocketry, but we're already at our first break. Everybody stand by. We're going to pause for our five-minute built-in hold here at the bottom of the hour. We will take a break, get you caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. When we return, we'll continue talking to Wes Olszewski, Patrick McCarthy about model rocketry. 321-768-1240, the number. Email is spacetalking@AOL.com. Please stand by and join us in a few moments. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. Everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. The phone lines and online inbox open for your questions or comments. Phone number 321-768-1240. The email address is spacetalking@AOL.com, where I've received a note from Claire in Cocoa Beach asking me if I've ever heard of the radio show X-1, and I have to admit I have never heard of it. Claire, if you know more about it and want to send me a link, that'd be great. I'll Google it when we get home. If anybody else knows about it, send me an email to spacetalking@AOL.com. Claire had some good practice holding her breath for watching rockets take off, which she put to good use, learning how to free dive and hold her breath for several minutes. I remember the old joke about working for Rocketdyne, the maker of the space shuttle main engines. You could be the best engineer in the world, but if you couldn't hold your breath for 8.5 minutes, you couldn't work for Rocketdyne, because that's how long it takes the main engines to fire and get the shuttle into orbit. Hey, we're talking with Pat McCarthy and Wes Olszewski today about the hobby of model rocketry. Pat and Wes and I all went to school together, served on the school newspaper, and somehow in all of that remained best friends after about, 25 years now, I hate to admit. Wes is on the phone from us near the nation's capital. Wes, let me ask you to real quick plug your Dr. Zuch. You're involved with Dr. Zuch. We know about Estes as the big model maker. Centauri was mine growing up but went away. Our good friend Tim Van Milligan's got Apogee model rockets out in Colorado. Tell us about Dr. Zuch and what you're up to with model rocketry these days.
Well, Dr. Zuch rockets came about with the birth of our first child. As you know, I'm also an author and writer, and when you have a little baby that you're trying to raise, you really cannot write. So
yeah.
You're always up and doing things. So anyway, I needed something to keep me sane, and so I started this little rocket company with a Saturn V and a couple of semi-scale Saturn 1Bs. And took them to a NARAM, which is a National Association of Rocketry annual meet out here in Virginia. And by gosh, I sold out in the period of just a couple of hours. So that kind of said, I have something here. And so I began to engineer and develop more and more kits.
Yeah.
They're all semi-scale. They're all historic in nature, with the exception of one or two. And it turned out that people want to buy this stuff. So my dad always used to say, whenever I was launching rockets, if you could find a way to make money at that, you'd be getting somewhere.
You could get somewhere. You
know, I'm getting somewhere.
You are. The neat thing about Dr. Zuch rockets is that when semi-scale, meaning that they look a lot like the real thing, they're not minutely to the dimension exactly right, but you know what, sitting on the launch pad and flying, they look like the real thing. And Wes's Dr. Zuch rockets are of those models that are very difficult to find as plastic models or any other kind of rockets. You know, the early versions of the Saturn I. I just finished putting together an Atlas Agena. Wes's Dr. Zuch has got a new rocket out that has the Orion capsule on top for the test flight in 2014 on top of Delta IV Heavy. Good stuff, Wes, obviously, and a lot of fun to put together, a little different. Pat, we want to come back to the basics of model rocketry for a moment, because I think we should explain to people exactly what it is we're talking about, what's involved in a model rocket, and how safe is it?
Well, sure. I mean, it started off, obviously, during the space race, and people like Homer Hickam were building their own rockets and packing their own propellants and doing the chemistry and things, and using metal parts and hard steel, and that was just too dangerous. So a couple of folks came up with the idea, well, we ought to make these out of cardboard and plastic and balsa wood. And then they started manufacturing model rocket motors, which are made by professional companies, and they use the same kind of propellants that are in the shuttle SRBs or the Delta Force solid strap-ons. These rockets can be flown over and over. They always have a recovery system, whether it be a parachute or a streamer. Some come back as gliders. Others come back as gyrocopters or helicopters. The idea is that they can be reused over and over again. You just load them up with a new professionally made rocket motor, put them on the launch pad, and you can fly them again. So, I mean, that assuming you don't fly them with too large an engine and fly them off the field like some folks want to do. But you never need to mix or work with your own explosives or propellants. The idea is you can go to any toy store or hobby shop, buy them right there off the shelf. And who'd want to mess with that kind of stuff anyway when you can buy something that has a well-known performance curve and you can plug it into the right model and get the thing to work. And it's a lot of fun to do it over and over
again. A lot of times we'll see stuff on the news and there'll be some interesting feature and you'll see these giant 30-foot rockets lifting off and there's talking about FAA clearances and trying to reach subspace and all that. Well, I shouldn't say subspace. That's Star Trek. Suborbital space, I should say. But, you know, rockets, I mean, you brought some stuff in here to play with. You know, they're as small as 2 or 3 inches to a couple of feet before you even really get crazy with it. It's a safe hobby. It's a simple hobby for kids to be a part of.
Absolutely, and it's less expensive than a lot of other hobbies that are out there for kids. You can get started probably with a reasonable rocket and launch pad and motors and everything for like $40 or $50. So that's a great way to get going. Kids that fly model rockets are never at a loss for a science fair project. There's always something that they can do. There's always some research they can do that translates into science and math and learning. So, you know, in spite of it, they're still having fun doing it, which is what makes model rocketry so much fun, is that, you know, you're learning things and having fun with it at the same time. And the motors go from like an ounce of thrust all the way up to 40 or 50 pounds of thrust. And then you get into the amateur size rockets like you're talking about, some of the larger ones. But model rockets basically go from probably an ounce of thrust all the way up to about 50 pounds. And you can fly some reasonably sized rockets on that, and certainly some great-looking scale models like what Les sells or what Tim Van Milligan sells from Apogee. He's got a beautiful Saturn V, which is about 4 feet tall and down to the last detail. It's just a spectacular rocket that people would love to have.
Wes, with Dr. Zuch, and you see these companies, we talk about Tim's company, your company, Estes is still out there, and the last time I looked at their catalog, it looked like they're offering even more rockets than before. And what I'm trying to understand is there an increasing interest in model rockets? I mean, I guess you can always count on the school kids and the teachers buying bulk kits, but do you think you in the industry of model rocketry are seeing an increased interest, and are more kids out there, you know, getting excited by this hobby?
Yeah, and primarily because we have a lot more teachers in the schools who are former rocketeers. Back in the 70s, when you and I were doing rocketry, and when Pat was doing rocketry in the 40s, I think it was.
In the 40s,
You had to be a closet rocketeer because it wasn't cool.
Yeah.
You know? And then eventually rocketry evolved to the point where those of us who were the closet rocketeers became the teachers and became the mentors for the kids. And now some of the guys that gave it up in the 70s are coming back. We call them BARS, for born-again rocketeers.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of my sales are going, because people look at my little Saturn. I have a Saturn V that stands 18 inches tall. And people love that kit for some reason, and they buy them like crazy. I can hardly keep them in stock. So but that brings up an important point, and that is model rocketry from some of the kits we're seeing from the major manufacturers are what we call buy-it-and-fly-it rockets, where you pull it out of the package and put an engine in it and shoot it. And basically, these are made in Gangdong, China, which it says right on the package.
Right.
And they just go up and come down. Okay, well, that's fun. The most fun is the building part. The building part is critical. It's absolutely essential. To put something together with your own hands and then put it out there and see if you can make it go 300 miles an hour and not come apart.
Right. Oh, I totally agree. You know, my Honest John was a ready-made, but then I started building them, and then you could paint them the way you wanted. You could design them the way you want. You get a designer kit. You can come up with some fancy fins. And then you realize that it didn't work. So what didn't work about it? Well, it was too heavy, or it was out of balance, or there wasn't enough surface area in the fins. And you learn all this science in the process of doing it. And again, Pat, going back to the safety aspect of it, you know, because again, you know, those of us former journalists, guilty for making big deal out of some kid burns his hand and, oh my God, model rocketries are dangerous. And then you find out that he was someone like Wes as a kid. He lit the fuse, didn't run away fast enough, and the thing burned his hand. Or it was a firework and not a model rocket.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's a model rocket safety code promulgated by the National Association of Rocketry, which is the national governing body and the certification body for all model rocket motors. And if you follow the safety code, and it's not overly bureaucratic, I mean, it still allows you to have fun, but you do things a safe way.
Sure.
Your models are properly built and balanced. You use the pre-made motors. You ignite them electrically from a distance. You make sure it's got a guidance system for the first few feet so it's going to fly on a predictable path. Those kinds of things are easy to follow, and that's what keeps the hobby safe and what makes it so great for students and teachers to use.
Well, and it is safe. And if you want to use NASA as an example, I got a big kick out of seeing some of the guys with the International Space University took some folks out there and actually launched model rockets from Pad 39A right next to the flame trench. Probably something you would have seen 20, 30 years ago, but these things are so safe that even NASA approves of their safety with all their bureaucracy.
That's right, and NASA also sponsors a model rocket competition for high school and college students that they fly up from up at Huntsville at the Marshall Space Flight Center every summer. It's a huge scholarship competition that they bring students out for. So, yeah, it's obviously supported well by the Department of Defense, NASA, and the science teachers associations around the country.
And real quick here, we've got Rick from Melbourne with a quick question for you, Rick. Hi, welcome to Space Talk.
Not so much question, but, you know, I'm a radio control guy, and what you were describing about the difference between the builders and the buyers, is, you know, I was talking to our local hobby store guy here who does sell a lot of rocket stuff. I'm not, if you want me to say who it is, I'll be happy to do it.
Tell us quick.
Yeah, Hobbytown.
Oh, yeah, Hobbytown's right. Great. Yep.
And, you know, I started building my own, and it's the same sort of thing. Balance. You can learn how to wind motors to do what you want, either high speed or high torque. You can all the stuff you're talking about with rockets. The problem is finding a place where people, they won't even let us use the parks when no one's there.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely an issue. Rick, I got to let you go. I appreciate the comment. Because what's interesting to me is seeing this rocketry now where it used to just be fly it and watch it parachute down. Now you got guys flying rockets to send gliders up that are radio controlled and do all this kind of incredible stuff.
Absolutely right. And one of the big competitions, what's really most fun is flying a raw egg and make sure you can get it back safely
Absolutely.
Without cracking the egg.
Hey, Wes, I'm sorry, Wes, are you still there? Oh, there he is. Hang on. There you go. Wes, you're back.
Yeah.
Real quick, because we're going to about wrap up here in about 10 seconds. Tell us where to find Dr. Zooch Rockets.
Okay, at drzooch.com, drzooch.com. And just in my own defense for lighting fuses, I could not afford electricity when I was that
Wes, thanks. Pat, you're going to stick around here for just a few seconds. We'll be back, hopefully, with Adrian Fee. We'll be back in just a moment.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk. With your reminder, you can stay in touch with us throughout the week. If you're on Facebook, keep an eye on the Space Talk page there. If you're on Twitter, just look for Space Talking. And for one-stop shopping, visit us at WMMBAM.com, keywords Space Talk. Let's now take a quick moment for our weekly look at the local launch forecast. All systems go right now at NASA and United Launch Alliance as we expect to see an Atlas V rocket launch from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station early this Thursday morning at 4:08 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time with a launch window that extends for 20 minutes to 4:28 a.m. The rocket is fully assembled with its payload at Complex 41, and the rocket is usually rolled out to the pad the day before with the timing of the launch on Thursday. I'm frankly not sure if that's going to be early Wednesday or late Tuesday. We may find out in a moment. The rocket will be carrying NASA's Radiation Belt Storm Probes mission, which includes a pair of satellites that will study the effects of space weather on our planet's Van Allen radiation belt, and in turn will study how it affects us. We'll carry the launch live here on WMMB beginning at about 4 a.m. or so. One way or the other, we'll let you know what's happening. Again, the Atlas V launch scheduled for this Thursday morning at 4:08 a.m. For more information about this and all the various launches scheduled around the world, do jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keywords space talk, and look for the link to our local launch forecast. And with that launch update, coincidentally enough, we have a special guest calling in right now, former Atlas launch director and gentleman who continues to represent Lockheed Martin in our community, the one and only Adrian Lafitte joins us for a few moments. Adrian, how are you today?
I'm doing real good. How about you, Jim?
Doing great. Doing great. Having a lot of fun talking about model rocketry. I don't know if you ever flew model rockets when you were a kid, did you?
No, I did not, but it was really interesting to listen to all your stories.
Well, we'll have you out for my launch of my Dr. Zuch Atlas Agena. Maybe you can push the button.
Sounds like a plan.
Sounds like a plan. Hey, speaking of Atlas, first of all, anything new on the launch? I heard this morning everything was fine. I didn't know if there was something new yet today.
Yeah, I think everything is marching good for the launch. Like you said, it's at 4:08 a.m. on Thursday morning.
Yeah.
And I think they're planning to roll on Wednesday.
Wednesday? That sounds about right. And we're talking about Atlas. This is really why you're calling in today, Adrian. There's an interesting anniversary as it refers to the Atlas V. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it is really hard to believe that this Tuesday is going to be the 10th anniversary of the first Atlas V launch. It seemed like it was just yesterday when we did the first Atlas V. And, of course, that was the payload was the Eutelsat, which always has been our customer for every inaugural launch.
Right.
And as you remember, at that time we were in a competition with Boeing to see who was going to launch at first between the Atlas and the Delta. And I was hearing you earlier, it says, we never launched before a time, and launch fever is the worst thing you can have. But the one thing that we did on our every inaugural launch is we do not launch until we're ready. And at 6:05 on August 21st of 2002, we successfully launched the first Atlas V.
An incredible record, Adrian. I mean, we never like to jinx anything, but an incredible success rate with the Atlas V and a lot of the Atlases, the Atlas IIIs and IIs that preceded it.
Yeah, and since then, there have been 31 Atlas V launches.
Incredible. 10 years, 31 launches.
Yep.
And a whole new way of doing business with the Atlas V, with this family of vehicles that you can configure in a variety of ways. And you've really established this Atlas V team, Lockheed Martin and United Launch Alliance, really established an incredible record and a record of reliability that's got everyone thinking that maybe this is the vehicle of choice for launching humans into space one day.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said earlier, I mean, we take every launch like it's the first one. Yeah, we're happy about the record, but for us, every launch is just like the first launch.
And the Atlas goes way back to the intercontinental ballistic missile of the early missile heyday. Atlas V carries a lot of that spirit and heritage, even though the vehicle looks very different and operates very different than the way it did way back when.
Yeah, we went from the pressurized system to a very rigid vehicle. We're using the RD-180 engine, which is obviously Russian provided, and that's been very successful for us.
And it's, how are you guys going to celebrate? Is there any way that you're going to mark the occasion beyond having a drink?
Well, interesting, because part of the team will be in Denver. As you know, since then we have formed a United Launch Alliance, but I'm pretty sure that somewhere in every part of the country on Tuesday, we're all going to be celebrating, whether we're all together or in different places, we're all going to be celebrating, because that was a huge accomplishment.
That was a huge deal. You can have cake or pie, which is the choice, you know, or ice
cream.
Yeah,
correct.
Absolutely. Hey, and just about a minute left with you today, Adrian. I also want to congratulate you. You're the chair, the head, the main guy with this year's United Way campaign here in Brevard County. Tell us quick about that, and how can folks help with the United Way?
Yeah, I'm the 2012 United Way campaign chair. Our goal is to raise $6.3 million. Our kickoff event is going to be on September 13 at 6:00 at the new cruise terminal at the port. So we're going to be inaugurating the new cruise terminal. At the same time, we're going to be doing a fundraiser for United Way.
That's outstanding. That's just that's
and,
great.
And I'm really proud that my daughter is also helping me in the campaign. And I'll encourage everybody to check the United Way website to see our campaign video.
Oh, and I've watched the video. Very moving, very tear-jerking, and very powerful. And it was a good job by those folks involved. Adrian, thanks for joining us today to celebrate the Atlas anniversary. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again real soon, okay?
Okay, thank you, Jim.
Thanks,
bye.
Adrian. Bye-bye. Okay, so there goes Adrian Feet. Just a few seconds left. You know what? Did you know? I don't know what Pat McCarthy's still with us. Do you know what your earliest version or memory of an Atlas launch was?
Well, No, I do know that the first successful Atlas ICBM launched on my birthday
on
in 1957.
And when, on the day you were born?
The day I was born, yeah. So I'm sure that's the tie to why.
And do you know that on the day I was born, there was an Atlas launch from the Cape?
Well, there were a lot of Atlas
there
launches
were a lot,
back
a lot
in the
of
day.
Atlas
that, we were all baby boomers.
Well,
so
that's true. I don't
babies
know we
and
so
rockets were launched in proliferation.
So special or not. I thought I was special to have an Atlas launch on my day, but I guess a lot of people do that too. Pat, thanks for spending time with us today to talk about model rocketry. And,
you're welcome, Jim.
And again, Wes Olszewski, thanks to you, Wes. I know you're out there listening. Adrian Lafitte, also appreciate it. Hey, next week on Space Talk, this is going to be interesting. We're going to be joined by Andrew Thomas. He's the author of a book about the restoration of the Saturn V moon rocket, now on display at the Apollo Saturn V Center at Kennedy Space Center. And he has written a book that I don't like at all, for a lot of reasons, and therein lies a very interesting tale. So tune in next week to learn, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. It'll be a really good hour. Also, don't forget that it'll be our last hour next week on Sunday afternoon at 3, moving Labor Day weekend Saturday at 2 o'clock. That is all for now. Space Talk is a production of Myla Solutions and is brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the op station for today's program. Once again, join us next Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMNB presents a weekend edition of the Best of Bill Mick Live. And hey, don't forget, we'll talk to you again very early Thursday morning about 4 o'clock with live coverage of the Atlas rocket launch as it begins another decade of operations. Good luck to the launch team at ULA and NASA. That's it for now. Take care, everybody. So long. We'll talk to you again real soon.